Awesome, man.
Awesome. So I want to welcome Michael Wagner to this podcast episode. He's the co-founder and CEO of StarAtlas.com or .io, which is basically a blockchain-based game. They're creating a metaverse where you could build your own ships, your teams, they have factions. You could go basically to war with other factions and, you know, get their materials. And, you know, from what I've researched, you know, you could basically make your own civilization in this metaverse, and you could even make money from these in-game assets. And so I know right now you're doing a poster sale. I actually got some of the early tier ones because I heard about it from a friend. And you have a background in asset management and handling for high net worth individuals. And so I think that's just really interesting. And I guess I want people listening to have a better understanding of kind of where you came from and kind of how this whole idea started in the first place. So welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Ray. Great to be on, man. I really appreciate it. I guess starting with that, you know, the financial, traditional finance background component of it, CFA charter holder, and worked in investment management, portfolio construction, and then investment securities analysis. And, you know, the relevance of that essentially is just that it has provided me a tool set for things like determining the intrinsic value of assets themselves, which is actually quite important for a game like the one that we're developing, and then a general economic analysis as well. But in 2013, got introduced to Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies through Scriptcoin mining, and, you know, really just jumped in with both feet and fully immersed myself in the space. Turns out that 2013 wasn't a great year to get into cryptocurrency, because it was at the height of a previous bull cycle. And you know, shortly after I got in, the collapse of Mt. Gox occurred. But nevertheless, what it did do for me was get me captivated and interested in the potential of blockchain itself and cryptocurrencies themselves. And so, you know, going forward into the next couple of years, just researched as much as I could about the space and analyzed various opportunities, and launched my first company in 2016, which was called the Tox Platform originally. It's a crypto and cannabis company. It's dedicated to delivering decentralized financial infrastructure to the legal cannabis industry. That company is still fully operational and kind of freestanding at this point. And then, you know, going forward into 2020, with many of the same team members that built Multi-Chain Ventures with me, we co-founded and conceptualized StarAtlas, which, as you said, is a space-themed grand strategy game. It's a massively multiplayer online game, core mechanics being space exploration, territory control, political domination. And then we enhanced that experience with a couple of other blockchain integrations, things like, you know, delivering all of the in-game assets as NFTs, so players have true asset ownership of those items they purchase, integrating two crypto native assets, cryptocurrencies, including Atlas and Polis. One of them, you know, Atlas being our in-game transactional currency, or effectively the in-game gold, and then Polis being a governance token with utility both in-game and outside of the game. So in-game is part of political strategy. External to the game, it's operated more like a DAO, wherein players will actually have the ability to introduce proposals and vote on the long-term development decision-making processes of us as an entity. And then the final component of it is DeFi integration, which allows players to generate residual yield and income off of any assets that they have that are not deployed or in use in game. So, and then we kind of encapsulate this entire concept, this video game concept, which we really view as our spearhead into user adoption, but we surround that with the broader idea or concept of a metaverse. And, you know, the metaverse itself is going to extend well beyond just the individual gameplay mechanics that we're introducing that creates entertainment value for players. It actually allows those industrious individuals and entrepreneurs to enter into the metaverse and create unique business opportunities for themselves. So it becomes much more of a virtual playground, this alternative virtual reality that people can persist within. And that, you know, all of these things combined is what allows people to play this game, earn income, create opportunities for themselves, create businesses, and generate revenue and just, you know, opportunities. And so in many ways, this is kind of a transformative human experience that captures the entire global audience, because whether you're a gamer or you're just someone who's looking for another way to create revenue for yourself or create income for yourself that breaks the confines of maybe your geographic location, it opens up this whole new universe of opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to touch in on that. I was saying it's kind of like RuneScape on steroids, you know, in space, because like in RuneScape, I used to play that. I think a lot of people, it's still, you know, people are still making videos to this day because of how dynamic it is. Like I heard some people would mine, you know, gold in RuneScape and sell it, you know, on another marketplace, and they would make more money doing that business than even some doctors in certain countries, you know what I mean? And so it's like the opportunities that people can create is like crazy. And I think you also know about like Axie Infinity, that game that came out, you know, people are, you know, kind of hiring people overseas to just, you know, sell the potions for them and create income. So it's, I mean, people were doing this before blockchain, but now with crypto and blockchain, you're kind of integrating it more seamlessly so people can make income like through just gaming, which sounds like a simple game, but you're actually making money in the game, right? It's pretty interesting.
Absolutely. And you know, realistically, our belief internally is that, you know, the integration of this, you know, decentralized Web 3.0 infrastructure that is blockchain is going to eliminate a lot of the friction that exists in traditional gaming. And perhaps more importantly, the model that a lot of game development companies hold today is that they really prevent or restrict users from being able to take that value back out of the game. You know, they prevent players from being able to actively sell items for real cash that they own to mine gold or, you know, mine materials and sell those on open marketplaces. And we're tearing that entire concept down in that all of the assets that we produce live on chain and are freely tradable. As I said, you know, integrating the two crypto native assets that are will be exchangeable on various decentralized exchanges as well as centralized exchanges, and you know, effectively trying to bring the next era of gaming to life through allowing players to own and capture the value that they're creating based on the time spent that they're committing to actually playing the game.
Yeah, so it's like for gamers who already spend hours just playing, like when I play like StarCraft 2, for example, but I'm not getting paid, you know, but imagine if you could get paid for playing a game and it's fun. I think there's going to be a lot more, I mean, emotional investment into it because it's like your livelihood in a way. But I see like a potential danger too. Like you've seen like Ready Player One, right? Where they spend more time in the metaverse than in real life. And I think with social media and everything, like people are always just on their phones. So it's like, what do you think about that? You know, the double-edged sword in that, like, it's great, you're creating opportunities, but at the same time, it's like they're spending more time in this virtual world than in real life. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a great question and something that we think about a lot internally. It's we're already considering methods that we can use to associate real world activity with the actual virtual game rewards that we're delivering to players. And I can give you just one example of that. And maybe to preface it, I would just comment that, you know, games like Pokemon Go actually encourage people to get outside, you know, encourage people to reconnect, maybe not entirely with nature, but at least get some exercise and get exposed to reality as well. And so this is kind of the concept that we want to deliver in doing things like creating augmented reality-based experiences in real geographic locations. So for example, you know, in Vancouver, there's this new deployment of 20 different art installations around the city. We were thinking it would be really cool to come out and have like an alien invasion in Vancouver, right? And you can travel around the city, you can complete these missions, but you're completing them in real life. by connecting your device to the AR experience, and then you actually receive rewards on chain in your actual wallet or in your game account for participating in these types of activities. So certainly it's not our objective to create Ready Player One per se, and to, you know, kind of deliver on this dystopian future. Obviously we hope things you know, progress in a positive manner in real life, but at the same time, we do think that the opportunities present through this virtual world also allows for a greater redistribution of wealth around the world, you know, providing these opportunities and greater balance to the global economy. And so it's really is a grand experiment. You know, everything we're doing is a grand experiment, but I do think it could be extremely disruptive to the way we even think about something as simple as, you know, country borders, these artificial lines that we draw on maps. Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's in our thoughts. We don't want a matrix, you know, the matrix kind of outcome or Ready Player One outcome, but we're still quite optimistic on the potential of the metaverse.
Yeah. So take us back to the origins of this, you know, like, were you a huge Star Wars fan when you're young? I think, like, why space and why this, out of all the things you could have chosen, and kind of tell us where this idea first started in your head and how you took it to where it is.
Yeah. So, I guess, you know, quickly to introduce a couple of the other, well, the remaining co-founders, Danny Floyd is our chief product officer. He has experience and expertise in AAA video game development. You know, going back well over 20 years, and he's been largely in charge of recruiting our entire art and product team. You know, when we started, we officially announced in January, but kind of in December, we only had the four co-founders on the team, and we're well over 60 people today, with about 35 of those people being on the art and product team. So things like, you know, concept art and animation and finish work and post-production. But that's kind of Danny's team and Danny's specialty. Jacob Floyd was also with me at Multichain Ventures. He's our chief technology officer, responsible for recruiting the entire engineering team, ensuring that we can take the product vision and deliver that in a real you know, software experience. And then Pablo Quiroga, whom I've known for a number of years, though, you know, doesn't have the experience necessarily in crypto, but he has deep experience in things like revenue generation and management, as well as corporate operations. And so we were fortunate enough to bring him on right in December, actually, as one of the co-founders. And he's responsible for a lot of things like marketing and communications and business development, and all of those other activities that allow us to ensure that we're reaching revenue goals that are necessary to continue to build out this vision. So, but of the co-founders, it was, I would say largely Danny and I at the time that just kind of sat down and understood that there was this big opportunity to integrate blockchain with gaming. You know, we're not the first to do it, obviously, and there are, some of these games have been around now for a while, but where we wanted to differentiate ourselves was that a lot of the blockchain-based games were still kind of rudimentary in mechanics. So very much card-based or turn-based games. And our belief was that we could deliver this AAA gaming experience, you know, something that would be attractive to a mainstream audience. And there's 2.7 billion gamers around the world. But, you know, going back to my earlier point, really, with the potential for revenue from this type of product, it really encapsulates the entire global audience. But we believed that we could take the AAA gaming experience, introduce or integrate blockchain into that and introduce that to the world. And that would create this whole new wave of crypto adopters. Now, you know, there are many different concepts we could have selected from, but it's more of just, you know, being kind of sci-fi guys and some of the types of games that we played historically. And, you know, I'll actually openly admit that there was one other component, and it's that the amount of initial design that needs to go into a space game is relatively lower, simply because you can imagine much of the background, the viewable space is just dark space, right? You see all the stars out there, but you don't have to get necessarily to this deep level of detail on an encompassing map. So there are a number of things, but most importantly, this is the game that we wanted to build, and it's the game that we want to play personally.
I've heard about another game. It's called like Earth 2.0. So what do you think about obviously what you're doing is different, and the fact you're building on Unreal Engine 5 is just like huge, because Fortnite was built on Unreal Engine 4 and the things that they could create was amazing. So would you say there are other competitors or other games out there? I think this one is the highest quality out of all the ones I've seen. And it seems like the team is much more not developed, but just it just seems like you guys have a game plan, you know what you're doing. I also like how you have like a global audience. I noticed in the Discord there's like a community for like Korea or for, you know, other countries. So like, I mean, is it gonna be not a country war, but essentially it's, I don't know, like the premise of the game is domination, right? Like territorial control. So in a way it is about like world domination, isn't it? And politics. And is there gonna be like I'm just curious to know how will the politics work out? Are they gonna be like diplomats and presidents? Like, you know, are they gonna be like Kim Jong-un's in this game? You know what I mean? And like President Trump's, like who will be ruling and who will be the dictators? Who will be the overlords in the game? You know what I mean? It's interesting, yeah.
So, you know, my comment on that is we don't know what the in-game, you know, reality is going to result in, but all of those roles and positions and careers and paths that people can take, I mean, they all will very much exist within the game. At least the potential for them to exist is there. So some of that is going to be contingent on upon us to help develop out and refine the game balance to ensure that, you know, essentially there is some level of equal opportunity, although we still see this as a, you know, it's intended to be a challenging environment where if somebody's able to extract a competitive advantage out of the game, well, they should be able to, you know, realize the return potential on that discovery. So it's going to be an extremely complicated system that we need to develop out. It's going to take a long time to balance that out. But one of the things that, you know, will be incorporating is, as I said, that Polis governance tokens allows for the individuals, the holders of that, to introduce these proposals and introduce changes to us as a game development company. And then ultimately, we do kind of see this evolving into a far more decentralized model, not only for things like player-created content, but also just for economic management and you know, the future direction of where Star Atlas can go. So it's the vision is kind of to turn this over to that global community that wants to be involved in this. And then we start to slowly separate ourselves over time as the centralized entity that manages the outcome. Kind of the power of collective consciousness, if you will, can drive the future direction of the game. And then with respect to competition, we're in a pretty unique spot right now. We do know that competition is coming, but you know, we're in an advantageous position in the sense that there aren't really any blockchain games that are developing out to that AAA quality experience to date. And we do have this deep, thorough understanding of how blockchain and cryptocurrency works and how to integrate tokenomics into the game economy. So we're kind of like creating a better gaming experience than what exists today in blockchain gaming. And at the same time, you know, our competitors in the AAA gaming space don't have this expertise in NFTs or cryptocurrencies or blockchain. Now that's not to say they can't ramp up their research and development efforts around that, but it just doesn't exist today. And so we're kind of sitting in between both of these different factions and trying to go as fast as we can to deliver before you know, a lot of this competition comes online.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I don't know if you heard of Vivi, like Vivi app, you know, Ecomi. They had a head start on NFTs too, because they were doing this stuff before NFTs were even blown up. So it kind of seems like you guys are also in that space. Like if you had a head start, it's really hard to catch up, you know, to where you guys are. So that's good. And, you know, as far as, you know, marketing plans, I don't think you guys have done any real heavy marketing yet. I think it's mainly been word of mouth. You know, what are your plans for that? And obviously, I'm sure you're going to probably speak at some big conferences. That's where you'll get exposure. But Are you planning to team up with like major Twitch players and, you know, stuff like that? I'm a marketer myself, like Growth Hacker, so I'm just curious if you have those plans and if you're planning to do the marketing before the arcade release in, I think, July, you mentioned, right? Is it in July? Just curious how that's going to work out.
Yeah, well, we have a pretty solid go-to-market strategy, to your point. At this stage of game development, we're focused mostly on community development through social media. I would say we really enhanced that, though, through a number of different partnerships and groups that we're working with, like Grow Your Base and even YGG, Yield Games, and you know, various other influencers, if you will, in social media. But our primary objective right now is just to educate the world that we actually exist. So it is just spreading the name of Star Atlas and the concept of Star Atlas to the world. Mm-hmm. We're not actively engaged in gamer marketing right at the moment because we don't really have a playable experience, and we want to wait until we get a little bit further along before we start heavily marketing the world in terms of, you know, play this game. We kind of execute on two separate tracks, the first of which is reaching out to that community of people that are familiar with cryptocurrency and blockchain and understand how to, say, you know, speculate on various crypto assets, and allow them to understand the value of this. And then concurrently, you know, getting this idea into the hands of early adoption gamers. I would say our community right now is split, probably something, you know, this is just really a guess, but maybe in the neighborhood of 50-50, where we have a lot of crypto enthusiasts, and then we have a lot of gamers that are just extremely excited about the idea. So it's we think it's both encouraging and impressive that we're able to attract so much attention so early on with, you know, starting with little more than a white paper and a dream, right? And so things are moving along quite quickly. We're marketing with a lot of our content art that we produce, you know, is being produced in enormous volumes, and we release a couple pieces every week. But yes, longer term, it's things like traditional marketing avenues and partnerships and collaborations with traditional gamer influencers such as Twitch streamers.
Okay. I know. I mean, if you ever need support, yeah, we know, like FaZe people, the FaZe clan, they're pretty big, I guess. So I've been involved in launching some coin projects and stuff, and so a big way how they pop off are from like influencers and marketing. But things like VV or like Star Atlas is just word of mouth alone is just getting you so much traction, which is awesome. And I think, you know, people are wondering, you know, some of the posters are worth like six figures, and, you know, not any gamer can just drop that kind of money. You know, how do you explain it? Obviously, these six-figure investments will probably make that much or more in the game, but, you know, how, I don't know if you want to go into like how many sales you've made on those, but, you know, what kind of things can people expect from those types of investments to those posters?
Yeah, so you're referring to the Rebirth Genesis of a Metaverse digital art campaign, which is kind of multifaceted in terms of intention from our standpoint. So that campaign in and of itself is really part of our broader marketing strategy. We're leveraging that to be able to create exposure and engagement with our audience over a 14-week period. And so the underlying mechanics include the release of one of these meta posters each week for 14 different weeks. Each of the meta posters is a multimedia experience that in which we developed all of the art, designed all of the art of the poster itself. We partnered with Shape Immersive out of Vancouver to create this augmented reality experience overlay on it. So you get this three-dimensional depth, and you get animations and kind of a sense of being there in the poster. And we're working with mainstream musicians and producers such as Blondish and the Bass Jackers and Renza and a couple of other big names that we actually have coming out real soon. And so the producers create these audio soundscapes that sit behind each one of the posters. Now, with all of that said, it does also generate revenue for us, sales for us that allow us to continue to grow, scale, and build out the idea of this game. Now, the way we modeled this was to be inclusive for everyone, right? And then also be able to tailor an experience to those, you know, whales out there, if you will. And so the idea was not to have everybody around the world be able to purchase the entire 14 poster set. It was actually created with these tier rewards based on accomplishing the collection of posters up to that tier level. And so our earliest poster was $64. Just purchasing that one poster would get you tier zero rewards that includes some game assets. Now, I do want to be clear, this is really intended to be a digital art experience, though. This is a collection of art and more of the traditional NFT style. We're enhancing the value of that art through this free distribution of game assets alongside the art. But we're really focused more on the collector and the underlying idea that this is capturing a moment in time, a moment in history, right? So if Star Atlas accomplishes all of the things that we want to accomplish going into the future, then these items will be collectibles. And so, you know, the other pieces of the mechanics include the price doubling each window. So, you know, by the time you get to the poster 13, yes, it's $256,000. Again, that's not for everybody to purchase. That's for those people who want to collect the entire series and have the ability to do so. But, and then also reducing the availability window in which people can purchase them. So the first posters were available for 7 days each. By the time you get to the last poster, it's only available for 3 hours. And the economic decision for that was that it creates something that we call a probabilistic rarity. And so, but you know, the first posters are higher in supply. More people are able to collect them, but more people are also able to get some of these early stage game asset rewards. When you get into the later posters, the because of the increase in price and because of the reduction in sale window, they are just going to naturally be more rare, most likely, probabilistically. And so, you know, if you're a collector of anything, as you, I'm sure you're well aware, you know, the more rare it is, the higher the implied intrinsic value is. And so that was the kind of the underlying idea. And we think that there will be very few people that have the entire collection, very few people that have the final pieces of art, but there's still an opportunity for everyone to collect this moment of in history and then also earn some in-game rewards as well so that they're able to start playing as soon as we go live with our mini game.
you know, it'd be cool if those collectors have some sort of special access. That's what people do with NFTs nowadays, but I don't know if you have plans on that, but any news as far as the arcade, how that's going to look, like what people will be able to do, and they'll be able to use the assets, the posters they bought in that arcade game?
Yeah, so we start with this in-browser mini game. Ultimately, the gameplay mechanics of that will include things like ship missions, ship configuration, space station configuration, as well as land ownership and mining operations. All of these features are going to be released somewhat slowly over time, but in a very structured roadmap. But not only does it allow the gamer to start to engage in some actual gameplay with us, but we are then also able to start delivering some of those financial rewards through things like, you know, earning Atlas or earning Polis or, you know, creating your own NFTs, things like this. So you'll actually be able to start generating yield and income off of the game through this in-browser experience. Concurrently, we're already undertaking efforts to develop out in Unreal Engine 5. They just released the early access of that a week and a half ago. And so our devs have been playing around in that already. And we effectively have two different development teams and almost two different products that we're building that just merge at the point of the assets themselves that will live on chain. And so while players are engaging in the mini game, we're building the Unreal 5 experience that is, you know, fully immersive, 3D, VR enabled. And the idea is that players will be able to engage in a pre-alpha release of that as early as July of 2022. One of the major advantages that we're going to have as a game development house using Unreal Engine 5 is just the speed with which we'll be able to develop out these game environments, as well as just the, you know, the beauty of the graphical fidelity. But Unreal Engine is going to give us a considerable advantage in timeline and roadmap for development.
So obviously with Unreal Engine, people can like make their own not worlds, but in a way, isn't that what people do with Fortnite on Unreal Engine? They made their own kind of, like Minecraft, you know? Is it gonna be similar with that?
That's not how we'll necessarily be, you know, implementing the user experience, at least not initially. Although when we get farther down the line into the whole metaverse concept where, you know, perhaps it becomes this multiverse where, you know, you're able to transition in and out of various gameplay experiences within the Star Atlas metaverse, within our universe, you can engage in somebody else's gameplay model, but your avatar will carry through. It will transcend our universe and it will flow into their universe. And maybe your avatar looks different, right? Everything kind of changes up. But what we're able to do is recognize all of those assets and all of that experience and maybe items that were collected over time because they all live on chain. So to the extent that we're using that, you know, we're using building on Solana, to the extent that we're using this Solana as the underlying mesh for metadata and asset data, then it's quite simple for other developers to recognize those assets in their own games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty crazy. You know, and if you could, if it's a metaverse, you could technically, can you take your NFTs to other metaverses, like your spaceship and your avatar? Like, is that something that's gonna happen?
So it's theoretically possible. There's, you know, still quite a bit of complexity that would go into how that would work. But if you
cross-chain NFTs, that's kind of different. Yeah.
Well, it's that. It's also, you know, our game will effectively recognize game assets and metadata in a certain state, you know, wherever we query that data from. But the NFT itself, which is the digital signature, the certificate of the asset, if you will, you know, that can quite easily be recognized by any alternative game environment. The question is, which metadata do they apply to that digital signature? So again, this kind of gets into complex territory and things that we'll be figuring out in a couple of years, I imagine, but it's the longer term vision for sure.
For sure. Awesome. I don't want to keep you too long, but, you know, I think there's a lot that was shared. I think a lot of people might be just confused still, but you know, if you had to sum up, I guess, your vision for Star Atlas, and maybe even after Star Atlas, like where do you see yourself? Because you started from like a asset background, managing assets for high net worth individuals, and then to creating your own in-game assets and people purchasing assets. So that's pretty crazy. And who knows, maybe in 5-10 years you won't even be doing Star Atlas, you might be doing something else. So where do you see yourself in like 5-10 years for Star Atlas and for yourself?
Might sound cliche, but genuinely I kind of just see myself living in the Star Atlas metaverse, assuming that we reach our goals. Like I might not be the CEO of Star Atlas as an entity anymore, but I might be the CEO of some entity that lives within Star Atlas. And it's kind of like, even that is a meta thought to possess. But I really do believe in the disruptive potential of what we're trying to create here. And it is a massive vision and a massive undertaking, but we have been executing on every front to date. I have a lot of confidence in our team in being able to do so. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing what we deliver over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's like a battle for the metaverse now, I think, you know, especially with blockchain and crypto. I think Epic Games, I heard they raised over $1 billion to create the metaverse. So it's like whoever can make the metaverse, but it's like not one metaverse can rule all metaverses, right? Like kind of in Ready Player One, that's kind of how it worked, right? I don't know how that
worked. We will see if there is... you know, essentially this collection of mass, if you will, to an individual metaverse. And by the way, there's a lot of different definitions of what a metaverse actually is. Again, in theory, essentially your ability to navigate through these different environments is a major component of what the metaverse actually is in my mind. And maybe I'll kind of finalize that thought with just the idea that Epic is the entity that's behind Unreal Engine. If they're investing into the metaverse concept itself, my assumption is that some of that will trickle down into how Unreal Engine works, and we'll likely be able to leverage that within our own game development. And again, probably use it to propel ourselves to at least be a part of that metaverse.
like if, if like, what are your predictions on, like, how would you define the metaverse, and what would your predictions be on how that would look like for people? You know, people in Axie Infinity will be in Decentraland. You know, it's, I mean, what are your thoughts on that before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I would just define, this is kind of my internal thought of the metaverse, and I kind of define it more as a social interactive experience. It's, you know, even for us, it's when we get to that point, it won't necessarily be about every single user that we have going out and engaging in things like, you know, space exploration, territory control, or political domination. They might just decide that they want to be a merchant within our game, right? And they can own some land, they can create a business around that land and find unique ways to monetize their time that aren't reliant on how we distribute Atlas. They can create an experience in the game that requires other players to actually pay them and compensate them for those goods. And that could be as simple as something as, you know, creating an apparel storefront where you create digital apparel and you sell that to players, skins effectively, or curating a digital art gallery based on NFTs within the game and you sell this digital art to other players. And so many other opportunities that will exist that don't rely on using our gameplay mechanics. But very broadly speaking, I think it's an alternative virtual reality within which somebody can persist. And the requirement to do that is that the economic incentives also are present. And so that hasn't been executed on to date. And I do think that blockchain as a component of that is a pretty critical piece of infrastructure. So we're really on the precipice of something big here in human evolution, even the technological evolution.
I could sense that. Yeah, well, I want to thank you for your time. And where can people find you, more about the information on you, the game, things like that?
Yeah, I would just, I think the easiest thing is staratlas.com. We have a link to all of our socials in there. We have a very active Discord community, and we also engage in what we call the Atlassian Town Hall. The Atlassians being the citizens of Star Atlas, and this town hall is kind of a clubhouse-like format where myself and some of the other co-founders will be on stage, and we'll be talking about things that have happened that week, and we're also actively answering and responding to questions from the community that are submitted in advance. So would encourage you all to join us for the town halls, but you know, otherwise active on Twitter, active in Telegram, and all of those links can be found through staratlas.com.
Okay, awesome. And you know, before we end, I want to ask the last question. So if you could go back in time, maybe speaking to younger, because I'm sure you never imagined yourself doing this type of stuff, just like how I never imagined myself doing what I'm doing with like Instagram and podcasting. So, you know, every entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur has some dream or vision, right? And I'm sure you had your entrepreneurial roots when you're young, for you to even start this type of venture, because it's definitely not the norm. Maybe other people were saying you're crazy, things like that. But if you could go back in time, what something you would tell your younger self, or maybe to those who are aspiring to be entrepreneurs or might want to do something different, but they just don't know what it is yet. You know, I'm sure, I don't know if you could relate, maybe you had that feeling of wanting to do something big, be someone different. What are some words of advice or encouragement you could give your younger self or to those listening?
It's a great question. I'm going to take the route of maybe offering some advice to other aspiring entrepreneurs, and that's, you know, using some anecdotal evidence. I've been an active endurance athlete for maybe the last 15, 16 years of my life, and you know, including participating in triathlons. But you know, anything like swimming, running, rock climbing, cycling, things like this, all activities that I enjoy. It creates this sense of persistence in your mind that really benefits you in just the way you live out your life, because you will encounter an enormous amount of failure and an enormous amount of obstacles. And to me, there's always just been that thought in the back of my mind, just as when I'm participating in endurance sports, of All right, just keep going, you know, just keep going. You're almost to the finish line. And if you can instill that mentality into yourself, it's going to help you enormously with business. And so, you know, you have to just not get discouraged. You're going to have a lot of failures along the way. And again, cliche, but they are all lessons, and those things will lead you to whatever the next concept or idea or opportunity you can discover. And yes, I mean, the only other part of that is just never stop learning, you know. Even when I got into crypto, there was so much that I had to learn, as we all do. And it's through creating that competitive edge through knowledge that opportunities become present.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, well, thank you for sharing. Thank you for hopping on the podcast. And excited to see how the arcade goes and maybe do a future episode in the future when Star Atlas is more fleshed out as well.
That sounds great. Yeah, appreciate all the great questions. It was, love the conversation.
Thank you.